Yesterday I did, as I alluded in my newsletter column, I cut back the ornamental grass that had grown quite tall beside the front door of my home. It's about this tall. Took a little while. Thankfully, I had a trimmer that made it a lot easier than using shears. But still, it needed to get cut. And this was the time to do it. If not cut, there would be no room for growth. The old blades would remain, and the new green would have to fight for space. There is a time for cutting. There's a time for cleansing. In this morning's gospel, that is exactly what we have. A time when Jesus set to the task of cutting back something that needed to be changed in order for new life to erupt. Of course, as John tells the story, it's a bit confusing. For this tale is told by all four evangelists in the New Testament. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the so-called synoptic gospels, synoptic, similar gospels, all put this at the end. As Jesus comes, it is one of the first things he does when he enters the temple after his triumphant entry on Palm Sunday. But here in John's gospel, it happens towards the beginning. And in John's gospel, it is not the last time that Jesus will come to Jerusalem. It's a bit confusing to hear it this way, because you would think that if Jesus did this, such a demonstrative act of forcing people out of the temple, that he would not be allowed back in a second time. Now, some have suggested that in this story we actually have two stories that have been pulled together, and perhaps that is so. That maybe earlier on in his ministry, he came into the temple and raised some questions, and he was asked for signs, and asked, by what authority? And asked, what are you doing? And he gave his response. And later on, those words became action. I don't know. I wasn't there. But we have received from John a story that upends our tables. A story that turns our lives somewhat upside down, because we have a picture of Jesus who is not meek and mild. Jesus who is not kind and loving. We have a Jesus in this story who is angry. Anger. You ever get angry? I do. What do you do with your anger? What do you do in a relationship with your anger? Anger is like a fire, is it not? It can burn. It can cut. It can destroy. If vented outwardly, if vented inwardly, it can do the same thing, can it not? It is sometimes said that depression is anger turned inward. Here we have a picture of a Jesus who is angry. What do you do with an angry Jesus? Is Jesus ever angry in your life? in this story, we have some, how shall I put it? Some things don't quite make sense. In the story, we have animals in the temple area. And if you study God's law, as it has been expanded upon, not only in the first so many books of the Bible, but also in the Mishnah and the teachings on the law, you would know that animals are not allowed, at least live animals, are not allowed in the temple for fear that they could get loose and somehow step into the Holy of Holies. And that would be an abomination. So here you have a story of animals in the temple. And the temple meeting, sort of like the meeting house of God's people. An area that is bigger than just the Holy of Holies. If you might think of the Holy of Holies, that's the sanctuary. But then you've also got fellowship hall. You've also got other areas. You've got the court of the Gentiles and others. Now, the appropriate place for animals is actually in the marketplace. Some have suggested that actually where they belonged was in the Kidron Valley, which was sort of outside of Jerusalem. Or on Mount of Olives. It might be helpful to know that back in that era, there was conflict. Shouldn't surprise any of us. There was conflict within the leadership of the Jewish people. Not just conflict between King Herod, the political leaders, and the Sanhedrin, who were the religious leaders. But even within the Sanhedrin itself, there were various factions, sort of like Republicans and Democrats, who may have, if you will, hated each other, had a lot of anger towards one another, and there were lots of power struggles. And some have suggested that one of those power struggles was between the high priest Caiaphas and others in the Sanhedrin, who had decided to hold their meetings not in the temple, but out in the Kidron Valley and out in the marketplace. And in order to get back at others, it has been suggested, he allowed for persons who were not officially sanctioned to sell animals to come in to the temple itself and to sell their animals. I don't know if this is true, but it may explain some of what's going on here and why there might be animals in the temple itself. But the fact that there were animals in the temple is not as disturbing as the whole system that undergirded why those animals were there in the first place. See, people would come as pilgrims to the temple and worship there. And those who had money could buy the best items for sacrifice. They could buy the best goats or other animals to be given to the high priest, who would then slaughter and sacrifice and cook in the Holy of Holies. Something that was pleasing in God's sight. It's a sacrifice. It was a whole sacrificial system that was built as time went on in a very inequitable way. It was a system of dealing with sin, of dealing with anger. The whole system was designed by God originally, was designed to deal with the negative aspects of the human personality, to deal with sin. You had like the Ten Commandments, which were shared with the understanding that they would be broken. And with that understanding that they would be broken, because we do break them all the time. Well, maybe not murder, but maybe murder in our hearts. Maybe not adultery actually, but adultery in our hearts. Maybe not dishonoring parents, but dishonoring them in our hearts. These commandments are broken all the time. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with the anger and the hatred that is within? One of the practices back in olden days was to have a scapegoat. You ever heard of the scapegoat? The scapegoat was an animal upon whom you symbolically loaded all your negative stuff and sent it out into the wilderness to get it away from you, to put your sins outside. And the whole sacrificial system itself was built upon placing animals at the center of all of this, that an animal was killed to expiate your sin, to get rid of it. Way of dealing with it. And here we have Jesus, who enters this place which is to be God's house, a place of prayer. And all he could see, was people who were misusing this place. People who were, through lies and through greed, making use of the system to really undermine it, to undermine what God had originally had in mind. They're making profit from it all. And Jesus, it says that Jesus took, he made a whip of cords. If you know anything about the law of Moses, you know that there are no weapons allowed in the temple proper. And that would include whips themselves. And some have suggested what he had to construct something to allow him to be able to shoo these animals out. Because without a firm hand, how could these animals be led away? Some have even said that he took some of their bedding, which was reeds and other things, and wove them together. I don't know. I can't quite imagine that. But somehow, in some way, Jesus fashioned some kind of whip to use upon those animals. And as I'm reading this story, I do not see Jesus using that whip upon people. It specifically says he used them upon the animals. But he cleansed that space to make room for something different. And he overturned the tables, spilling all that money onto the ground in anger. This is a picture of an angry Jesus. But don't lose sight of the cleansing aspect of that, that I began this sermon on. There needed to be cleansing in order for something new to come into being. For Jesus, anger had a purpose. His actions had a reason. It wasn't mindless. Too often when we express our anger, it is anything but mindful. When we express our anger, you know, like we shouldn't with our children, we don't count to 10. Isn't that what you're supposed to do? That was what I was taught. Didn't always work. Did it, Caitlin? Didn't always count to 10. Because oftentimes when you count to 10, this action is halted. When we don't place a control on that action, it damages. And perhaps as we are dealing with this angry Jesus, we can see God's mindfulness in him. There was a purpose to all of this. There was a reason behind it. And as John tells the story, What follows is talking about the temple itself. Now, the people who were questioning, according to John's gospel, what Jesus was doing, they're looking for signs. They're looking for reasons, and Jesus gives them one, but they don't understand it. And in the translations that we have, Jesus says, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." A couple things you need to know about those words. First of all, the word "destroy" there is actually the first definition of the word in Greek that is used. Of that word is not destroy, but it is loose, set free, liberate. That's an important distinction. Now, secondly, the word for temple that Jesus uses there is not the same word as in just a few verses previously, where it talks about the whole temple. There, it is not the whole temple. In verse 19, it is the sanctuary. Jesus is not talking about the meeting house total. He is talking about the sanctuary. Not the fellowship hall, if to put it in our own language. He is talking about the sanctuary. And in fact, he is spiritualizing it, if you will. He says, "Set free this sanctuary, and in 3 days I will raise it up." Of course, what did they hear? In John's gospel, when people listen to Jesus, in 9 cases out of 10, they don't get what he's saying. And this is one of them. Because they're thinking of the whole temple there that took how many years to construct? And they're saying, "What? You tear down this whole sucker and you... how can it be raised in 3 days? Come on." But the followers of Jesus later on looked back upon this moment and they got it. They got it. And we are fortunate if we get it as well. For Jesus is, in a sense, standing there and saying, "Set free the sanctuary. Liberate it. Maybe even destroy it in the sense of that grass that I spoke of. And in 3 days, we'll be raised up." Jesus is pointing to himself. The story is actually an Easter story leading up to it. This is a story about an angry Jesus who comes with a purpose and a reason and a mission. It's a story about a Jesus who can see further than the tip of his nose. It's a story about a God who disregards Republican, Democrat, Sadducee, Pharisee. A God who sees to the heart and sets free. It's about a change in how things happen. For no longer are God's people to place their sins upon some scapegoat. No longer are some animals supposed to be responsible for our sin. But rather, God and Jesus Christ takes upon that responsibility upon himself. And in the process, sets us free. Such that from now on, this is not the real sanctuary. This is the sanctuary. I mean, even the prophets talked about a time when God's law will not be written upon tablets, but it will be written upon the human heart. And we look not to an outside temple, but we look within, which is where Christ lives. The grass has been cut. And now I await outside my front door for the green to come out, for growth to happen. My friends, allow this Jesus into your life, that He can help cut away what needs to be cut away. And you know some of the things that need to be cut away. As you deal with your anger, as you deal with other aspects of yourself, as we deal with our sin together, allow this Jesus into your life to cut away what is dead, that new life may spring forth, and that together we might spring ahead.